Bring it down, band. Now I just came here tonight to say, I just want to say, we're talking a very special Christmas. Hit it. It was 1987. Three Men and a Baby topped the box office. A Different World debuted. The very first Disney Happy Meal tie-in was released. And the hottest musicians contributed to an album to help benefit the Special Olympics. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now, joining me are a whole band's worth of Totally Rad Christmas all-stars and a brand new guest. My first guest you'll know from the Holly Jolly Xmasu podcast, it's Scott Leopold. Second, and new to the show, from the Sounds of Christmas podcast, it's Ken Kessler. Now, from the Jingle Jank and Tinsel Tunes podcast, I've got Scott Newman and Dwayne Bailey. And from Christmas Clatter, it's Todd Killian. Finally, and last but not least, it's from Huey and Bax, Vinny Brzezinski. Guys, how's it going?
Good. Absolutely great.
Great.
Going well, Jerry.
Thanks for having us, Jerry.
Yeah. I'm excited about tonight because this is like one of the best Christmas albums out there, especially like in the 80s, like from its time. There's not really a whole lot of great stuff, even though there's a lot of great tunes, like album-wise, they're not like really great full-length albums. So this was like the album to end all albums of, you know, for Christmas, at least in the 80s. I mean, I can't wait to dive into it. As I was telling some of the guys off mic, you know, and not to pull the curtain back too much, but, you know, I don't want to dive too much into the music theory of these songs because we'll be here for about 7 hours. So instead, I just kind of want to talk in general about the album. But before we do that, I want to get a little bit of your insights, your history, your experience. So why don't we start with Ken? And we'll go from there. Ken, what's your experience with A Very Special Christmas?
Very Special Christmas came out the first year I had my first professional job in radio.
Nice.
And I was the new guy, so I was going to be working Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, every time anybody needed a break. And this record came in, and it was unlike any of the Christmas music that we had, because it was so many huge stars and almost all the songs were things we could play. And that just didn't happen with Christmas releases before this one. Everybody has their favorites from years past, but when this one came out, these were almost everybody on it had been on the charts in the last year or two before this came out. So this was huge.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember when it came out and just being so blown away by like the list of people on here, because I was used to, you know, the Time Life Treasury of Christmas, you know, Bing Crosby, Perry Como, Nat King Cole, you know, all these like crooners. And then all of a sudden this album came out and it was like, wait, what do you mean Madonna's on here? And, you know, the Eurythmics, what? So I just remember being blown away by that. What about you, Vinny?
Yeah. So when this came out, I was, you know, younger, I was 7 years old. Right. And Jerry, we were on the same age. Right. So you remember when you were in elementary school, right. You would go in and they'd make you sing the basics, right. Hey, here's Jingle Bells.
Yeah.
Here's all this kind of stuff. But I grew up in a small hometown, and to hear this, you either had to have it, you know, the album or tape at the time. Right.
Right.
Or, you know, you hear it on the radio, but you always never got the newer stuff. Right. You never heard of Bruce Springsteen doing a Christmas song. you never heard of Run DMC. I mean, right? But you know, you always heard, you know, Nat King Cole or this and that. It was a complete game changer for me as a 7 year old. Be like, The Boss, Madonna, all these guys, rock stars can sing Christmas songs. What is this? And it just changed everything for me. I mean, I remember having it on tape, and I was showing Jerry the other day. I I only have like 10 CDs left because it's all digital, but I still have my very special Christmas CD in my car. It's like one of the two ones that I have. Like nice. I'll never get rid of that until it breaks. It's staying with me.
What about you, Jingle Jank Scott?
I was 11 when this came out, and I remember seeing the cover artwork that's done by Keith Haring,
yeah.
And I was really impressed by it. I've always been I was always a visual kid, and I asked my parents to buy it, and they were not interested whatsoever. And then my neighbors had it, and I went and apologies to A&M Records, but I went and copied theirs. And I had a cassette of it. And I listened to it. And this was also later on the first CD I ever bought myself, like with my money. So that was kind of a big deal when I was probably 12 or something at the time.
Right.
And, you know, like the other guy said, amazing artists on here. And there was nothing like this at the time. I'm sure we're going to have a really interesting discussion today about what this album was like then. You've really got to put yourself in the shoes of somebody in the 80s. If you look at it with today's eyes, that might be different. But back then, this was groundbreaking, to use Vinny's words. It was amazing. And, you know, it's still a good album. I have mixed thoughts on it now. I'm going to hold my tongue on that one until later.
I'm kind of the same way. Yeah.
But it's fun. It was a lot of fun then. And I'm so excited to be here, you know, talking about it now.
I'm glad you're here as well. What about you, Dwayne?
So I was 17 when this came out. And I certainly wasn't the target audience. A lot of the songs I had heard in parts because of the radio stations played them a lot around in New Zealand. So I didn't buy the album, but my dad bought the album and played it all the time. So it was never intended for me because I was really deep in my heavy metal music by then, being Striper. 17 in the 80s. Yeah, Motley Crue, AC/DC, Iron Maiden. So this was never targeted towards me, and I had no interest in it whatsoever at the time. Obviously, as I've gotten older, I've become a bit more of a Christmas music geek, for the lack of a better term. But the memories that it brings with it is what I remember, as opposed to the songs themselves.
Right.
And a lot of this album is still played, though we'll get into it more later, is still played each year here on the radio in parts. They're really stuck around.
Right on. What about you, Holly Jolly Scott?
See, I was 15 when it came out, so I didn't have a regular paycheck yet. The biggest impact that I had from it was on MTV. You know, suddenly MTV, instead of the handful of videos you saw every year prior to this, you're seeing, you know, John Cougar Mellencamp, you're seeing U2. And actually the local radio station was kind of slow to adopt a lot of the music from this album. I think the first year you heard Whitney Houston and the Eurythmics, but the others really didn't start catching on around here until, at least a year or two later.
Right on. And Todd?
Well, when this album came out, it kind of skipped past me because as much as I loved Christmas, you know, growing up and stuff, I never did. I was kind of late to Christmas music. You know, I spent a long time loving Christmas, but not really liking Christmas music. And like Dwayne, I was kind of in a heavy metal phase. I didn't want to listen to any of these guys at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't there wasn't any Iron Maiden on here. I didn't care. And still waiting for that. Yeah. It wasn't until I really heard and fell in love with a song from Volume 2, which was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Was it Christmas Time Again? Christmas All Over.
Yeah.
And it's like I started searching that song out. It's like, oh, they got a Christmas song, so maybe they got a whole Christmas album. That led me to a very special Christmas Volume 2, which led me to Volume 1, and then whichever all the other ones are out of time. And then it's like, oh, these are like all the songs on the radio every year just on one album. And that's really when I got into it and really learned to appreciate it. And so I didn't really have any nostalgia for it, but for me, there's a couple stinkers on this album.
Well, let's get into that before we go on. What are y'all's favorites?
I just have to make one little quick note here. And Todd and Dwayne, it's okay to admit that you do have the Twisted Sister Christmas album.
Oh, that's right? A very that's a very good
you
album.
You guys do know you
it
have
is, it's
you
actually a really good it. Album.
That's actually a very good album. I tell people that all the time. I said, pick up the Twisted Sister Christmas album. You'll be pleasantly surprised because it's
actually pretty
really good.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Probably the best version of Deck the Halls I've ever heard.
Yeah, actually. It's better than it should be. Yeah.
Yes.
Actually. So, Jerry,
yeah,
I pulled this album out 2 days ago.
Okay.
And I'm very familiar with it, but mm-hmm. I have not sat down and intentionally listened to it in a very long time.
Okay.
And I was really excited. And I sat down and I was kind of underwhelmed. I wouldn't say it's aged like bread, because it's not moldy, but it's aged kind of like bologna. Like, oh, maybe we could still eat it. Maybe it's a little questionable. And just some of these songs don't hold up anymore. And here's the cool thing that I discovered. What I liked when I was 11 is very different than what I like when I'm 45 years old. So you asked what the favorite is. My favorite was Gabriel's Message by Sting, which is absolutely not something I would have been interested in as an 11-year-old. But now I'm like, wow, that's excellent. It has aged well. It stood the test of time.
That's actually my favorite as well. I don't know if it's just his arrangement of it. I don't know if it's because I think Jars of Clay covered it. I don't know what it is, but it's that one seems to transcend a little. The other ones, there's a lot of synths and, you know, they're very much set in the 80s, which I love.
I should have said, not including Christmas in Hollis, because that's an all-time top five classic song. Mm-hmm. And I knew I loved that song, but of the others, I would go with Sting.
Well, I mean, how can you hate that song? It was in the greatest holiday Christmas movie ever in Die Hard. Can't dislike it.
One of the things I find really interesting about Christmas in Hollis is that every radio station I worked at said, don't play that. You can't
really.
And this went on for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. And then something changed and it suddenly you hear it. You hear it on Sirius's on all their Christmas stations. You hear it on Christmas stations all over now. Somehow, I don't know if it's the nostalgia of it or that.
Ken,
the people who are on the low rungs got power or a mix.
When we were young, I remember my parents saying like, oh, what is that garbage? You don't listen to that garbage. Right. And, you know, you kind of hold what your parents said, whether you agreed or not, you know, you hold it in the back of your head. And I was in a Walmart probably 5 or 6 years ago, and I heard Christmas in Hollis over the PA system. And at first I was kind of shocked, like, oh my God, I can't believe they're playing this. But then you think about it and you're like, well, we're all in our like 40s now, so yeah, it's probably okay to play this, and it's extremely benign, especially by
it really
today's
is
standards.
There's nothing
absolutely
really
nothing
about it at
wrong
all.
With it when you look at it with today's eyes, but at the time it's really interesting that you said that you weren't supposed to play it back then, you know, because it I wouldn't say it was controversial, but it wasn't your normal fare
at
Christmas.
Well, see, and I don't think MTV really even started playing it until the following year.
I think even at the time in 87, MTV played, you know, rap music only during Yo MTV Raps. You know, it was
well, that wasn't even
until
it was kind of like 90s?
That came out in 88. So I don't recall ever seeing the video for it until after Die Hard came out.
It certainly didn't play over here at all.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Well, and that's interesting that you mentioned that, because in South Texas, I don't remember hearing it on the radio ever. You know, I mean, of course, we're like 99% Hispanic. So, I mean, we're not gonna hear. We hear Feliz Navidad like, you know, five times an hour. But, you know, it's like something that we never really heard. So I didn't really grow up with it except for this album. Like, that's the only reason I knew it, because of this album, you know, because I didn't realize it was in Die Hard until much later, you know. So it's just one of those things that I didn't connect the dots. So that's really that. I mean, I wonder why they would do it. Is it just because it was rap?
I don't know.
The first station I worked at, there was a sticker that the program director put on the CD case that was in the studio that said, anybody who plays track number 8, Run DMC, Christmas in Hollis, will be fired.
That's hardcore.
Yeah.
I think that's how you know you've made it as a rapper, when
to be fair, it was a Puritan station, so
yeah. But yeah, so besides Christmas and Hollis, what are y'all's favorites?
I'm partial to Stevie Nicks's Silent Night, just because of the memories that comes with it from when Dad played it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, Winter Wonderland by the Eurythmics, other than Christmas and Hollis, that would be my favorite. And that's one of those that it went from being a favorite because it was the Eurythmics to being so overplayed around here that I never wanted to hear it, to then coming full circle and being one of my favorites again.
It's a good one. I feel like that song by the Eurythmics is probably one of the most often still played from this CD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I call it CD, album, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
When you hear those opening bars, and is it Annie Lennox, I think?
Mm-hmm. Annie Lennox, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just absolutely so iconic, the way that the strings in Nat King Cole are. You know, you just hear first few bars and you're instantly transported. I hear it all the time. I'm not sure about the others, though.
Over the ground lies a mantle of white, a heaven of diamonds shine down through the night. Two hearts are thrilling in spite of the chill and the weather.
Well, Christmas Baby Please Come Home by YouTube is one of my favorites, and it gets played.
Mine too. One of the things I really liked about the U2 song, the U2 cover, is that in 1987, not a lot of people had covered that Christmas song. You had Darlene Love, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
So it was really fresh and new.
Yeah. Pretty much she was the only one that did it, so much so that she was the one that would come on like Letterman's show and do it, you know, every, what is it, Christmas or Christmas every Eve year, or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And no one else did. So yeah, you're right. That was definitely one of those covers that you're like, okay, I get it. But the one that always throws me off, like, I don't know, I can't really take it, is the I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus by John, you know, Cougar Mellencamp. I don't know what it is about that version. It drives me nuts.
I like that version. I don't know if it's that accordion in there or what it is, but that just kind of has that calypso kind of sound. It's always kind of made me smile.
I'm looking at all these songs here, right? And Jerry knows that here in Dallas, we have this radio station that starts playing radio, like Christmas songs, mid-November, which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going through this and I wouldn't say
every single
quarter of these songs are on their rotation, right? Yeah. And not even like a small part of it. Like I'm looking through here, mm-hmm. you know, Eurythmics, definitely mean, you know, Bruce's Merry Christmas Baby. Mm-hmm. John Cougar Mellencamp's always on there. You know, I'm like, man, they still get played a lot here. And I'm just, you know, so are they the best versions? No, I just don't know if they have whatever they do, but I just remember when I was younger, and I remember going to my mom, like, what's Backdoor Santa mean? And she's like, let's just skip over this one.
And next.
Yeah, I want to talk about that one in a minute, but I think Ken wanted to go, and then I want to talk about that unflushable turd on this album.
I want to talk about that one too.
Well, one of the things that I really loved about this record when it came out is that other than the Springsteen track, everything was new for this album, which is another thing that just didn't happen. You would get a Christmas comp and it would be this one from an artist and you're like, oh yeah, I remember having that 45. And oh, I remember when that came out a few years ago, but this was all new and the Springsteen song was just a B-side to a single from a couple of years before. So it wasn't like it was something old. You couldn't get it on the CD,
right?
But everything else, all the rest of it was new. And that was really, that's kind of exciting.
Yeah. Ken, my wife made an interesting comment when we were listening to this on the way home. We went to the mall today for President's Day. She said, you know, I would have never wanted an entire album of John Cougar Mellencamp singing Christmas or an entire album of Bon Jovi doing Christmas, but you had these little samples and these slices and they were all put together. All I remember from that time period was like the Time Life compilations and stuff that they would start selling. So this seemed amazing to me at the time. I maybe I just didn't know better what was available, but to have all these stars singing Christmas in one place seemed amazing to me.
Well, and I've read several things that have said this really completely revitalized the Christmas music industry in America. I mean, prior to this, you had, you know, country singers, you had, it was a lot of older stuff. And this came out and suddenly it was really hip to put out Christmas music again.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard the same thing about the A Christmas Gift to You from Phil Spector. Mm-hmm. And you know, is this kind of like our generation's version of
like
that?
Like a trend?
Like the things had gotten so stale and all of a sudden it got this major shot in the arm from something like this or Phil Spector's album.
See, and now it's like commonplace. Like now people want to put out, you know, a Christmas album. They'll have a couple of their standard, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm doing a Christmas album next. You know, that's what you do. But back then it really wasn't done. I mean, Scott, you mentioned, you know, country. Yeah. There was like George Strait, Randy Travis, you know, the Judds had a Christmas album that was really good. But besides, you know, Alabama, but besides that, I mean, if you were going to do something Christmassy, at least in this area, it was like a song, you know, maybe two songs. Yeah. That's really about it. And so to have like this whole album of just, you know, these one songs, I mean, it was quite remarkable to me. And I think you're right. I think updating them, including a lot of 80s instrumentation, you know, stuff that was popular at the time, I think it definitely helped.
I read a book called Jingle Bell Pop. It's on Audible. It's pretty short, too. It was a gift from them 1 year. And they were talking about this album in there. And they said before this, a Christmas album was something singers and stars did at the end of their career, right before they were trucked off to Vegas. Like it was not a cool thing to do. And now they said, well, you're expected
to
do
Elvis.
That.
Unless, Jerry, Todd, you go.
No, go ahead, Dwayne.
Jerry, you mentioned the Judds. And of course we spoke about that TV special based on this album.
Top of the Pops,
And the Judds was one of the highlights of the TV special, and it's a shame they weren't on this album.
I agree, because their album's actually really, really good. It's very just, it's understated, it's in their style, you know, just straight right in their wheelhouse, but it's like ridiculously good. Just they harmonize well, everything about it. So I would have liked to have seen, you know, their version. I don't remember which song it was that they sung on Top of the Pops.
I can't remember. Yeah.
But
and of course, the Pointer Sisters being on here, and they weren't on the TV special.
They weren't on the special.
No, and that's a bit of a highlight on the album too, I feel.
I do too.
It was missing from the TV special. Yeah.
Yeah, it really starts off the album strong, I think. Because it's fun. You know, they kind of have that little banter before they actually get, you know, into the actual song. And then they you know, use that arrangement from the Jackson 5. And I mean, it's they nail it, I think. And it really sets the tone for the rest of the album that sometimes the rest of the album doesn't quite live up to. But at the same time, it you know, it's fun and up tempo. And it's like, yeah, OK, this isn't, you know, what my parents listen to. This isn't what my grandparents listen to. It's definitely not Lawrence Welk, you know.
When I started listening to it, I was like, oh, he's just another version of, you know, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And then they double tempo it. And then the song just takes on its own life. And I feel that's one of those songs that needs to be played really fast. Otherwise, it just drags on. And I feel like it really opened the album quite strongly.
And I think that's one that's kind of fallen out of favor. I mean, for a few years, they played the heck out of that. And it's one that I don't hear it on the radio anymore.
It's too many other good versions of that song.
Yeah, not much. If they're going to play it, it's usually either Bruce Springsteen's version, I think, on the radio, or you'll hear the Jackson 5 version.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because I agree. I think this version is actually really solid and fun, and it lives up to the hype, I think.
this version's really close to Springsteen's version too, so they sound very similar. In fact, Clarence plays sax on with the Pointer Sisters. Oh. So it is very similar. So I can see why a lot of stations dump it, because it's the same, it's too close to Bruce's version.
Yeah. But at the same time, they're more in tune. Which is a shame, because I love Bruce Springsteen. And I'm glad that they went with, you know, with Merry Christmas Baby. I like his version of it. You know, it's fun, and not, you know, his version, but rather with the Pointer Sisters. I just, I think it would benefit more people, or just at least expose more people to different quality songs if they actually played this one a little bit more on the radio.
Yeah. Jerry, speaking of being exposed to songs, I didn't realize how bad the version of Backdoor Santa is on this album. And I only learned in the last couple years of Clarence Carter. I mean, just to give reference here, I'm like the whitest kid from the suburbs of Connecticut, most uncultured you can imagine. I never heard Clarence Carter. I wasn't exposed to really awesome R&B music.
Right.
Now that I know what the original Backdoor Santa sounds like, I heard this and I couldn't even listen to it. I could not. After about 30 seconds, I was like, nope, we can't do this.
There's no other Christmas song Bon Jovi could have done besides Backdoor Santa. I mean, you have Backdoor Santa covered with Christmas and Hollis. You know, they sampled the guitar riff from Hollis for
It's basically on this album twice.
It's like,
so you know, they took it off a few years later, and they I Wish Every Day Could Be Like Christmas on there in place of it.
Wow, I didn't know that.
What was the other one Bon Jovi did? Because he had another Christmas song in like 92 or 93 ish.
Oh, you're gonna say 1980.
No. Well, he did have that one too. Yeah, his first recording. That was a Merry Christmas R2D2 or something like that. And if the snow becomes too deep, just give a little beep. We'll go in by the fire and warm your little eyes. Spreading Christmas cheer will be easy with you here. We'll dance and sing and play.
From Christmas in the Stars. Yeah, but he was really, really young when he did that. That was his first official
recording.
Can you guys tell me who Alison Moyet is?
She's from the British band Yaz or Yazoo. Phenomenal singer. I guess their biggest hit was Only You, you know, and all I ever knew, only you.
It's not ringing a bell.
Yeah, it's a cool song. I like the song. That was probably their biggest hit, I think. All I needed was the love you gave. All I needed for another day. And all I ever knew, only you.
She was with the Vandals as well.
Huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was huge here in New Zealand for a one-hit wonder, so to speak.
So the budget got tight.
That's probably what. Well, they only had like 250,000, I think, that the label Jerry Moss of A&M was actually willing to put up to record some of these tunes. And I guess I probably should actually talk about why this came about. So Jimmy Iovine actually, he thought of this when he realized that after his dad passed away, his dad who loved Christmas, he really was kind of feeling just bummed out every Christmas after that. So he died in 85. So he decided he was going to kind of turn it around and rekindle that love. And so he wanted to make a Christmas album and just pull a bunch of artists. Unfortunately, with all the labels, no one really wanted to like lend out their artists, and trying to divide all the, you know, all the royalties was going to be a hassle. So he ended up deciding to do it as like a charity album, which was kind of the popular at the time. I mean, we had, you know, Band-Aid, we had We Are the World, Farm Aid.
Do Hands Across America about then too?
It could be, something like that. And so he was able to convince him to let's donate it. And it was his wife, Vicky, who actually was the one that worked with, you know, volunteered with the Special Olympics. And she kind of knew Eunice Shriver. And so said, hey, let's donate it to them. And the album came out in October of 87. And by March of 88, they were giving them like a $5 million check, you know, which is quite something for yeah. a Christmas album. But I mean, they like pulled every string they could think of to get this thing done. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think, was the one that asked Bon Jovi to, because he's married to Maria Shriver. So he was like, you know, the in-laws of the Shrivers. So, you know, he asked Bon Jovi to do a song, and Bon Jovi agreed because he loved, wow. you know, Schwarzenegger's music. I mean, just they asked everyone they could, and they got it done. You know, they flew out to Glasgow to record U2 at a recording, you know, a sound check of all things. I mean, there's just all these different stories, and the U2 one, I actually think sounds one of the better sounding ones on the whole album. And it's just,
you said Schwarzenegger's music.
Did I say that? He's a fan of his movies. My bad.
Oh, it would still be better than that some of these songs.
Yeah. You mean you've never heard Schwarzenegger's music?
Yeah. Let Arnie take a shot at Backdoor Santa.
It'll probably be better.
I think he's got real world experience. So.
Oh, oh. moving on.
So, Scott, you mentioned Alison Moyet. She did three songs that you may have actually heard of, and when you hear them, you'll go, I'm pretty sure I've heard that. It was Love Resurrection, Invincible, and All Cried Out.
Those don't ring any bells to me.
If you heard them, I'm sure you'll go, I've bloody heard that before. She's got quite a strong voice, and the song that she played here didn't actually push her voice very hard. Mm-mm. But she could have done a lot more with the song based on what I've heard her sing in the past.
Was it an odd choice for her, in your opinion, that song?
No, but I just felt she just phoned it in.
Coventry Carol is not really that popular.
It's not a popular Christmas song. In fact, it's not even really a Christmas song. It's a song for the Feast of the Holy Innocents. It's also called Childermas, which is on December 28th. It's literally like a lament for the children that King Herod killed, you know, all the two-year-olds and under. So it is an odd choice for like this album.
Yeah.
Yeah, how did they come about to pick that song is what I wonder. Because on one hand, you got Here's Santa Baby. And then on the other hand, you got the Feast of the Innocents or whatever you're talking about over here.
Like, I don't know.
It's in the public domain. Budget was going thin, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Or money for the Special Olympics.
They only had 250,000, man.
Yeah, she would have been better to sing Oh Holy Night or something like that. That would really push your voice. Oh,
I bet she would have sounded amazing on that. Yeah.
Yeah, and put a bit of gravelty in there, if that's such the word, because she has that gravel sort of sound to her voice.
Yeah.
That would have been a better choice, at least. But, oh, well, it is what it is.
It's kind of interesting that there's such a mix of secular and not non-secular. I don't know what you call it. You know, carols and
sacred,
not carols.
Sacred and secular.
Sacred, yeah, there you mm-hmm. go. Especially for a pop album.
Well, but I think that's also kind of standard for Christmas albums. You know, you kind of have your... like your one or two, like Joy to the World and the First Noels. And then you have, you know, some of your other ones like Baby, Please Come Home and you know, things like that. So, I mean, I get it, but yeah, you're right. It does really, there's a big difference between Santa Baby and this one here, especially the way Madonna sings it.
Oh, good Lord. Ah.
Well, I just checked and on the Twisted Sister album, they sang, Oh, Come All Ye Faithful. So I guess you're right.
Yeah.
It sounds like Madonna is trying to sing to a child in a child's voice.
It's like she's never liked Santa Baby as a song. No,
it's never been one of my favorite songs either. Not even when
Queen Stefani does a good version, I feel.
What was interesting on that song, this is the guy who wrote that song. I don't know what his name is, but he was in that book that I mentioned earlier, The Jingle Bell Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that at that point, that song had been relegated, and this is his words, to black radio. Like, and wasn't played anymore.
Well, it was Eartha Kitt, right, that did it? Was
Eartha Kitt,
Eartha Kitt did it way back in the day. But after he said that after the women's movement, the popularity of that song just completely plummeted. In his opinion, the only woman in the 80s that could pull that off was the Material Girl. He said no one else could have done it. And he said she completely resurrected that song. And then his royalties like started flowing in. Yeah.
I don't mind the Eartha Kitt version. Most others are not that great. I'm not a fan of this Madonna one.
I kind of like Colby Calais' version of it. It's just straightforward. It's a little bit faster. It's not as, I mean, Madonna sings it and she's trying to be, I think, like Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
When she does it. You know?
Can we all agree though that Michael Bublé's version is the worst ever?
Yes, we agree to that. Yeah. Saying the buddy.
So far.
So far. Don't tempt anyone, Ken.
Aren't we doing this as a compilation later on in the year? All of us can together?
Exactly. We'll all sing Santa Baby.
We'll donate it all to charity.
Yeah. But you know, in 1987, this was really on brand for Madonna.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what else she could have sung. And it would have been a little bit like when Elvis did his Christmas album. If she tried to sing Silent Night or something, people would have been in an uproar.
Yeah. When did she do Like a Prayer? Was that like 89 or something?
Yeah, it was a little bit.
That was like the height of the you know, the church versus Madonna at the time.
It was. Yeah.
But with Madonna, right? And when I was younger, I'm going through it. I'm like, when I hear the song, I'm like, man, Madonna is like, you know, this is weird. And then later on, I remember at the time my parents were looking at me like, you don't understand what the rest of her songs mean. So like a Virgin or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, when you go back and I'm going back, I'm like, oh yeah, this does fit her at the time. But at the time I was like,
yeah,
what is she doing here? Why is she doing this? And then you're like, oh.
So what do you feel about the Pretenders and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas?
I was trying to remember the Pretenders today. And I was a little young for this. You guys were more in the sweet spot to know what was, you know, what these people were doing. I couldn't remember what the Pretenders had done at the time.
I mean, they started late 70s, right? With like Brass and Pocket. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I like their Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, but 2000 Miles has completely pushed that out of the public conscience, I think.
It's a good version.
It's slow though, right? It's super.
It is very slow, and I don't like towards the end when she's singing. She scoops into a lot of the notes, and so for me that always kind of just ruins the song a little bit. It's because she's scooping in and she's a little flat on some of them. And it's like, oh, what are you doing? But I mean, overall, I'd still enjoy it. It's just not one that if I'm wanting to listen to a Christmas song. Like that I'll pick.
I don't think any of these are songs that I would go out and pick, with the exception of Christmas and Hollis. Like I'm just recently getting into vinyl, you know, like an old man collector here, and and having limited money and storage space for this stuff, I have to be very careful about what albums I pick. I'm really glad that I listened to this, because I think I would have thought, oh, I have to own this on vinyl. I don't want this on vinyl. I'm good. I'll listen to it on Apple Music if I want to hear anything.
I was just going to say, it's funny that you said it was quite a slow song, because when I watched it on YouTube, I thought the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I speed it up to the 1.25 speed. Mm-hmm. It sounded so much better.
Really?
Yeah. It just needed to be that little bit faster. 1.5 was a tad too fast.
Yeah.
But by just speeding it up just slightly, it actually gave the song a bit of life.
Yeah. Yeah. It does drag, unfortunately. I really like Stevie Nicks' version of Silent Night though. I think that one is
That's good.
It that's like I listen to it and it makes me wish that Fleetwood Mac had done like a whole Christmas album, like just all Fleetwood Mac, you know, with Lindsey Buckingham kind of directing you know, everything. I think it would have been fantastic. And so that's like if I could put anyone on this album, it would be like Fleetwood Mac with, you know, their classic lineup there, but oh well.
Yes.
Did anyone like the version of Santa Claus Is Coming to Town by the Pointer Sisters? Because I found it kind of obnoxious. There was all this hooting and hollering going on in the background, and it was totally distracting, and I hated it.
But see, I really enjoyed it.
I think they tried to bring in the party vibe.
I don't have any feelings for the Pointer Sisters. Like, I remember my parents listening to them.
Neutron Dance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody Hills Cop. Let's go. Come on.
I know.
They're pretty huge in the 80s.
I did go down that rabbit hole on YouTube after that.
I can't hear or I can't have anyone say the Pointer Sisters without thinking of Beverly Hills Cop and yeah the Neutron or, Dance for sure.
Or Saved by the Bell, but hey.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah. Yeah, I remember loving I'm So Excited. So yeah, I actually really did dig their version. The one that I mean, besides I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, the other one that really drove me crazy was Bob Seger. But I'm just not really a Bob Seger fan in general.
They play the heck out of that now, though.
Yeah they do. Yeah.
I don't know how it's been revived the way it has been, because it certainly was not the big hit off this album.
Yeah.
And I think Sirius played it, once every other hour this past season. I mean, it was constant.
It's probably gotten revived because so much of other Bob Seger stuff keeps getting played on classic rock all the time.
Oh, maybe. Stuff.
It also reminded me, I don't really like Bob Seger.
And yeah,
I want to reach back and have like strong memories of my dad or car trips, like that's the kind of cassette he would have put in and been really excited about.
Yeah.
And sure, there's a little nostalgia there, but I wouldn't go out seeking any of this. Well, not, I mean, I can't say any of it, but definitely not Bob Seger.
That song comes with a lot of nostalgia because, as you mentioned, it's still played, especially here in New Zealand, every season. It's just hounded through the radio stations.
Yeah.
And every time I hear it, I think back to the 70s, well, sorry, 80s. And even though I like the song Little Drummer Boy, this one is up there on the versions of Little Drummer Boy that I like, but I don't go and hunt the song out. But if it comes on the radio, I won't switch it over.
Yeah.
Or if it comes on a general playlist, I won't flick the song, but I won't go and add it to a playlist or hunt the song out.
Have y'all heard a Joan Jett's version of Little Drummer Boy? That one
probably
is cool.
But I can't recall it.
I like that version. If they had put that one on this album, that would have been amazing.
You know, Bob Seger did a Christmas song in the 60s called Sock It to Me Santa, which is a real fun Christmas song, and that's what I was expecting when I heard Bob Seger was going to be on this album. And by comparison, this is a dirge. This is just really slow, and Bob Seger's not a drummer, so why is he doing
it?
yeah
that I like put Buddy Rich on or something.
Nice. He'll overplay the song.
Jerry, one of the tracks that I listened to and for a second and just fast forwarded right through was the Whitney Houston one, because heard that song so many times. I don't need to hear it again. Like I have not forgotten. And Whitney Houston, yes, amazing singer. I was never a fan of hers, though. She doesn't interest me. I completely respect her as an artist and her talent, but it's like moving right along.
Yeah, she's in the Mariah Carey camp.
Oh yeah, I can't stand Mariah Carey.
In like the mid, the mid to late 80s and early 90s, Whitney Houston was, this was like perfect. She was like huge, a great choice for this. But I agree. And she sings the heck out of the song.
Yeah,
she
I was going to say, we're not going to talk about music theory or anything, but like as for singing and musicianship, it's probably one of the best tracks on the album.
It really is. Yeah, she sings a mess out of it. But I agree. It's a little... And it's almost gospel choir-y a little bit, in some of its tones. Mm-hmm.
It's like vocal gymnastics that here on Mariah. I've lost it already. That they do. They take a song and they're really good at the song, but then they kick in with that over singing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that they wreck the song.
Yeah, Mariah Carey's music is like that for me. It just feels overdone.
This Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey talk, I will not feel so bad making fun of Stevie Nicks later on in the episode.
No, I love that version.
I don't think it's going to be a really popular opinion, Todd, but okay.
I'm used to it anymore. So
I didn't like the Bruce Springsteen song. And
really?
Well, Merry Christmas Baby is actually a pretty good song.
Right.
It sounded
it was live. Yeah,
it sounded exactly like the Santa Claus is Coming to Town, which I absolutely hate. You know, it's because Bruce Springsteen's doing that same shtick, like, oh yeah, practicing real hard, get down to get your new saxophone. You know, I just I don't want to hear any of it. And this one felt like a carbon copy, although I like the song Merry Christmas Baby more than I like Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
So tell me how you really feel. Just
tainted the other. I don't know. But if I don't know, I was probably just about 5 years too young. I probably would have been a huge Bruce Springsteen fan if I was 16, not 11.
Right.
So here's a question for everyone. Is Christmas in Hall is the only original song on this one? I'm looking at this list and I think the rest are all a cover, right? There's nothing. Mm-hmm. That's the only new one.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, Christmas in Hall also came out on another album in 1987, Christmas Rap. So I'm not sure if they wrote it for that or wrote it for this and put it on there.
But I mean, the rest are all covers, right? I mean, I don't think any.
Right.
Yeah.
No, mm-hmm. I thought it was written for this album because I remember watching Jingle Bell Rocks and he also had that guy from Def Jam Records, the A&R guy. And I thought I remember him saying that he convinced Run to do it for this album. I could be totally wrong. So don't bet your money on, you know,
Bill Adler. Yeah.
Just put it on something else. You know, it got bought for another album that year,
which it's probably the case because my understanding also is that it was written for this specifically for this compilation here. I remember seeing that also in Jingle Bell Rocks. And
well, they admitted that they can't sing, didn't they? And so they went with the Streets, which was a rap. So,
yeah. Now, since this is an audio medium, first. Todd is holding up a copy of the Christmas Rap album. I'll paint you a word picture here.
Yeah, they don't need to know. No. Yeah,
go ahead. Got the Adidas, so you know it's official Run DMC.
Yeah. Yeah, and on the back, someone's just in a buffalo stance. So, I mean, it works well.
Yeah, I mean. That's either Run or DMC.
I don't know.
Is that? Is that a guy made out of ground beef, or is that that guy paper. From the 80s that like the Inside Out suit?
I think he's wrapped, right?
Yeah,
I get
Christmas
it.
Rap.
Christmas rap.
Got it. Okay.
Not to be confused with the Waitress song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You disappointed me. I thought you were going to say there was like a lost track from Hall & Oates on here. Cause I was like, what? Really? Oh.
And see now I would have loved to have a Hall & Oates song on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I looking at it from like 10,000 feet, the mix of stars here is a little weird to me, but maybe that's just my lack of familiarity with these 80s, you know, stars. I just,
well, that's a good question, actually. So if you could put anyone from the 80s, like a big 80s name on this album that wasn't on there, who would you put on?
Michael Jackson.
Men at Work.
Duran Duran.
Oh, nice.
Huey Lewis.
Oh, yeah, Huey Lewis would have been really cool.
Huey Lewis would have been cool, yeah.
Well, and apparently, because, you know, they've got the, I forget which song they put out, but apparently they've got another Christmas song that they've recorded that is sitting in some vault somewhere that just hasn't seen the light of day. And
that's cool.
In one interview,
Huey Lewis?
Yeah, he talked about before he lost his hearing, they were planning on doing a complete Christmas album at some point.
Mm, that would have been cool.
Uh-huh.
That's some of my favorite stuff to come across on when I do Jingle Jank episodes, is to find out, oh yeah, this song sat in a drawer or in a closet for like 30 years. Then it was accidentally released on like some compilation later. I love that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, they recorded Winter Wonderland for their fan club.
Yeah.
In like 1985. And they sent it out on a green cassette.
Nice.
And I only know that because my roommate had one.
That's so cool.
Well, so, and the year that's the sports album came out,
it was around there, 84 85.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm disappointed there's been no American Psycho reference yet, but hey, for Huey Lewis. But yeah, but we also forgot about Journey, guys. We have to, I'm sure Journey would have done the hell out of a Christmas song.
Journey, yeah. With Steve Perry back at the helm. Mm. Yeah, that would have been really good.
Yeah, or Kansas.
As weird as it is, I think I would have loved to have like a B-52s Christmas song on here. Like you know, this is still weird. Yeah, it definitely would have been
their
unusual
weird period, right?
Exactly. Can you imagine like a Rock Lobster-esque, you know, Mesopotamia kind of version of something on here?
When did Love Shack come out? Was that closer to 1990?
It was like 89, yeah.
Yeah, so this, so you're saying it was closer to Rock Lobster and the weirdo stuff, right?
Yes, yeah. Because I think their guitarist was Ricky. I think he passed away in like 87 or 88. It was around that time. So, they got popular again. Well, they got more mainstream, I should say, after that. And
so I'm guessing they couldn't afford somebody like, who's the guy that sang Little Drummer Boy with Bing Crosby?
Oh, David Bowie.
They couldn't afford like a level of him, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Madonna was still pretty huge.
Oh, that's true.
I mean... Yeah.
Prince could have been on here.
That would have been so cool.
Yeah, I would have loved to have Prince cover like an actual or write an original that's not so melancholy, like you know, Another Lonely Christmas. I think that would have been pretty cool as well. Yeah, and they probably would have raised a ton of money because this is 87. He was still really popular. You know, Purple Rain happened in 84, and then you know, the year after he had Raspberry Beret and that album. And yeah, so, I mean,
you got the look.
Yeah. Big. Yeah. I think that would have been fantastic for sure.
I was about to say Bryan Adams could have been on this, but he was.
Oh, he was. Yeah.
The most forgettable song of the whole album. Apparently. Yeah. Forgot, who should have been on here? Bon Jovi. Wait a minute.
What do y'all think about that Bryan Adams? I mean, it's okay.
It could have been just, anybody.
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of run of the mill, which is a shame.
Every other Bryan Adams song, it's fine and you forget about it. So
yeah,
I like Bryan Adams. I like his song Christmas Time that came out a few years before this as a single.
Oh, Reggae Christmas even.
Yeah, so they should have used that.
Yeah,
that really sounded like him. This could have been anybody.
Something about Christmas time. Something about Christmas time. Joy in the children's eyes, the way that the old folks smile, says that Christmas will never go away.
Jerry, you know what the Bryan Adams song reminded me of when I was kind of thinking of this? I usually do that analog where you say, all right, this album is now, what, almost 40 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you go back to, okay, I was in 85, 40 years before that would have been 1945. And I think about, I don't know, a song, Bing Crosby or Frank Sinatra. That's probably a little early for Frank Sinatra, but that stuff seems to hold up and continue to get airplay a lot better than this 80s stuff. And there's just something about this that I just didn't want to hear 80s music today when I was listening to a Christmas album. And I don't know what it was, but it's just not the same. It's not classic in the same way to me. Now, you guys might have a completely different opinion, and I totally respect that, but it doesn't hold up for me kind of as a whole. And that's disappointing because 11-year-old me thought this was amazing, and 45-year-old me is like, it's all right.
I don't know. I mean, because it does, like, most of these songs, yeah, get a ton of airplay. So I guess it still kind of holds up.
There's a reason I don't listen to those kind of stations anymore either. They play the same old stuff. Like Scott mentioned Sirius XM. That's almost all I listen to at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And they've got a great variety versus like the same 11 songs, you know, on a loop.
You got to remember, you know, most people that listen to Christmas music listen to it for about 6 weeks.
Those people are wrong.
So having, you know, 40 songs to cycle through for 6 weeks is plenty. So why deviate from what's been working?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. okay. So if you could be on this album, like if you could sing one of these tracks as like a backing vocalist, which song would you want to be on? Like, you know, assuming we could all sing very well.
Christmas and Hollis.
Yeah, absolutely. A little appropriation there, but I would go for it. Sure.
It's the one that holds up.
Yeah. I'd be willing to play drums for Bob Seger.
Nice.
I think the Eurythmics would have been quite interesting. Just to hear where she came from in regards to the mix that she used for that song. Because it's very much of the 80s, you know, compared to other versions.
Yeah.
And it would be quite interesting to be in the room to hear why some of those decisions were made.
It's definitely a little more experimental than some of the others on this album. Yeah. Mm.
I want to play with Bruce Springsteen as a backing vocalist just so I can be back there. Well, first I want to meet him. That would be really cool no matter what. But then I'd be like, hey, this song kind of sucks. Can we do a different one?
Yeah, I think I'd want to sing with Stevie Nicks. I mean, I think that would be just so awesome. But again, I'm just a huge Fleetwood Mac fan, so I'll take it. But I think for me, that's the one I'd definitely want to sing on. Yeah.
I wouldn't mind meeting Madonna, but I want to meet 1987 Madonna, not 2002 Madonna.
What about you, Todd?
I'm not going to pick Bon Jovi, even though Living on a Prayer is my go-to karaoke song.
Nice.
I'd probably pick the YouTube Christmas Baby Please Come Home, because for one, that's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, it's a cool song.
Just to be in the room with I love it when Bono is one of my favorite frontmen of all time. And
yeah,
that song feels solid. Kind of timeless too. It holds up really, really well. It didn't feel like a relic of the 80s. Like some,
I think
of
it's because they honor the original version so well and how they put it together. And
they did try. Yeah.
Was it the instrumentation and that kind of stuff too? Like it just didn't feel like some of these are like, oh my God, this is from the 80s.
You talked about, stuff aging well. It's because it's not holding on to that, obvious 80s influence, not that classical keyboard sound in the background and things. And, that's why music ages well or doesn't age well. And same for movies. It's just kind of the look in the feel. It's like I watched Tombstone the other night with my 14-year-old boy, and he's seen it for the first time. He's like, when was this made? And I was like, 93. And he goes, it looks pretty good for 93. And it's like, I guess so.
That was cutting edge. Go to bed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Who asked you anyway? Oh man. But all this does make me wonder, what would you guys say would be like your happiest memory or moment of this album?
Does it have to be the song or just a memory about the...
Either one. I'll take either one.
You know what? I would say, bringing this CD up to the cash register at the Caldor department store in New England, in Connecticut, where I lived, and buying it for myself. I was so proud of it. And I loved it because my parents hated it. They didn't want anything to do with it. And that was just such a happy, rebellious, like early preteen memory for me.
Nice. What about you, Vinny?
Jerry, like just like when you did for the Time Life CDs, like this is my first Christmas CD, first Christmas album.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hold up. But like I said, I have that CD. Actually, I stole it from my aunt. So Antina, if you're listening to this, you're still not getting it back. But it just reminds me of, hey, look, this is what got me into Christmas music, right? I dug Nat King Cole and Elvis and all this kind of stuff, but I think this is what set me on the way of other Christmas stuff and hearing other people and being open to hearing it. And it will still be my first and will always be in top in my mind.
Right on. What about you, Ken?
I think for me, I've always loved Christmas music, and there's Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, the Beach Boys, all of that. But when this album came out, this was made for me.
Yeah.
These were the people that I listened to. I watched on MTV. These were for me. These weren't people who had their highlights 20 years before I was born.
Yeah.
This was for me.
Yeah, it's similar to mine. Like my parents not like it. This wasn't made for our parents, and I liked that about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. What about you, Scott?
Now, see, I need to preface this by saying Scarecrow was like one of the biggest albums for me and a couple of my friends. Mm-hmm. So the first time I saw the video of I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, that was huge. Because here, John Cougar Mellencamp doing Christmas on MTV. It was just a huge moment for me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it holds up, but back in 87, it was something else.
Was he, and I'm trying to remember, was he still John Cougar Mellencamp, or was he just John Mellencamp, or was he John Cougar? I couldn't remember when he went to the different names.
I think he had dropped the Cougar by then. It's hard to remember though.
Yeah. I don't recall specifically.
Love or hate Mellencamp's song on this one, it is his style. It could have
very
come
much
off
so
of any of his albums at that time.
Very much so. Yeah.
Which reminded me that I've never ever searched for John Cougar Mellencamp on a streaming service to listen to. I was like, that's that music I don't listen to.
But you're right. I mean, I think what I love about this album most is that everybody really made the songs their own. Even the ones that, you know, like U2, you know, they just kind of played it, you know, like I said, at a sound check, and they didn't really deviate too much. And yet it still sounds like a U2 song. It doesn't sound, you know, like just a cover of Darlene Love singing it. And so I think that's what I really love about this album, is that they're all doing them, you know, they're making the songs their own. And so for me, that's like what really holds up about it. But what about you, Duane?
Before I mention mine, which is not going to be a surprise to anyone.
Yeah.
When we spoke about the TV special, and mm-hmm. we spoke about the little girl on stage singing with John Mellencamp.
Yes.
It turns out that's his daughter.
Oh, oops.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't remember what we said, but I apologize just in case.
Yeah. And I believe she became a singer and a bit of a social media person or something like that.
Oh, but good for her.
Yeah. When I did a little bit of research on the song, it's like, oh, that's his daughter. Whoops. Yeah, because I think we did say some things. So my song would be Stevie Nicks' Silent Night, because I hear that song, it's just the memories that come back from it. And the fact that she does an excellent job singing this song.
Because your dad was a musician, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he was a guitarist. And this is one of those songs that came out at Christmas time. Hence the album is mentioned. And any of the songs, there's probably about 5 songs on here that get played and got played back in the time. But the Stevie Nicks one was the one that made Dad the happiest. So I think he had a crush on Stevie Nicks. So
who didn't?
Yeah, who didn't? But as a result of that, whenever I hear it, it always just takes me back to where we lived back then and the type of life that we had back then. So
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it's the memories that come with the song. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Todd?
For me, the memory comes from the song, I've mentioned it 1,000 times already tonight, Christmas Baby Please Come Home by U2. I remember it was like the late 90s, 97-ish or so, and I was driving home from college at Christmas time in my light blue Ford Escort I had. I was flipping through the radio and heard Christmas music playing. And one song, I don't even remember the song, but it's like right when it was fading out. So another song was coming on. And then this song came on by YouTube. And
by YouTube.
Yeah.
And YouTube. I know it's late over there.
tell you what I've been doing today. But it was like that moment when you have where it's like all of Christmas just kind of washes over you. And, you know, you're heading home for the holidays and it's everything's kind of cold and gray. And you just kind of get this. It's Christmas time feel, and I still remember where I was on the highway and everything when that song came on. It just kind of hit me, you know, it just right in those Christmas feels, and that's probably a reason why this song in particular, you know, holds such a special place for me.
See, that's Todd, awesome. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, so you just was it a Mark 1 or a Mark 2 Escort you had, Todd?
What's that?
was it a Mark 1 or a Mark 2 Escort?
Oh, no, it was just a regular hatchback.
So the later model than what we had here.
Yeah. It was a small little hatchback, like literally like 19 horsepower.
Yeah. I had the Escort GT, Todd. I was I was badass, you know. Ooh,
yeah. Although in that hatchback, I could fit my bass and my full stack album if I positioned everything correctly and put it in the right spot.
Nice.
And to go to gigs, yeah.
Yeah, so that's cool.
10 and a 15 cabinet and my Ampeg. You had to put it in the right order through the right doors.
You got a Tetris in just right.
But I figured it out.
Yeah, over here, that Mark III Escort was called a Ford Laser.
Oh.
Yeah, wow. And we had Mark I's, which is late 60s, early 70s, and Mark II's, which is the late 70s. Mm. And then they switched to Ford Laser. So
I don't remember that.
Escorts here were just economy cars that were
nothing. Yeah.
I know Christmas, and that's about it.
Great rally cars.
Jerry, did everybody get to go? Sure,
I think so.
You make sure that you have Ford pay you for this.
Yeah.
That's it. Make all checks payable too.
Well, you know, anytime you mention a brand name on a podcast, they're supposed to send you
someone's bad mouthing the Escort. Yeah. Give them a check, Jerry. One thing that you mentioned, and this came to me when you were talking.
It's very about, married with children, by the way.
when you mentioned Christmas Baby, Please Come Home, you know, the U2 version is good, but you mentioned Darlene Love, and it made me think. Yeah, if I was going to pick a version, I would pick the Darlene Love version, but that Eurythmics version of Winter Wonderland, that is the definitive version to me. I don't know another one that I would go to.
You don't like Stryper's version?
No, I had To Hell with the Devil, bought at the same Caldor. but Tri-City Plaza in Vernon, Connecticut. But I hear that, and that is the version I want to hear of Winter Wonderland.
Yeah.
I just thought that was kind of neat. That's probably the only one of the covers on this album that I would say that about. There's probably every other song, every other track has one I'd rather listen to.
I got to, like, a different version, you mean?
Yeah, a different artist.
Yeah. Well, maybe not Gabriel's Message.
I don't know that I'm even familiar with that song. Maybe that's why I liked it so much. I was like, oh, this is new and different.
I got to say, I really we just kind of briefly mentioned it at the top, but I mean, that one is still my favorite. I love what he does. He tries to emulate like that Madrigal style. It's very much, you know, polyphonic.
It reminded me how good Sting is.
It's,
and I'd like kind of forgotten.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a great arranger. I mean, he really can do it. And, you know, he composed a lot of the music for The Police. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, I get why. Now, of course, he didn't write the song. He just, you know, took this old Catalan song. But I thought he did a fantastic job putting it together. And so, yeah,
that doesn't really fit with the rest of the album, though.
So he actually wrote this one. Weird. This one was from 85, I believe. It was on, what's the name of that? It was like a B-side to, was it Russians or something like that? The album that he did.
Oh, The Dream of the Blue Turtles.
Something like that. Yeah. And so anyway, he donated the song to it, and it's fantastic. Now, when we saw Top of the Pops, which is, you know, it was a big show back in the UK, and then they brought it over to America for like a season. And they did, their Christmas episode was about this album, but only like half the songs are from this album. The other half are just other artists doing it. And so Sting was there, but he just kind of, I think he lip synced. I don't think he was actually singing as some of the other ones were, but I mean, it was just him by himself on stage.
That song comes after I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. And tonally, it's like I just pulled the e-brake in Todd's Escort and did a bootlegger turn. It's like, what?
Well, and then it's followed by Christmas in Hollis.
Yeah, exactly. It's sandwiched. Yeah.
If you really like this this Sting song in here, you guys got to check out the album If on a Winter's Night that came out in
2009. Yes, that's another good one. Sting has
That was the standout artist where I said, oh, I would go listen to an entire album of Sting singing Christmas music.
It's a good album, yeah.
If on a Winter's Night is Sting basically doing this for a whole album.
Yeah, and it's his version of Soul Cake, that Peter, Paul, and Mary Asolin song. I mean, it grooves. It's got a nice, just good groove that I dig so much. But now we come to my favorite part of the show, which is a little bit I like to call To the Max. So this is where we're going to, we do our best impression of our favorite part of this album. So it can be a little bit of lyrics you want to do, or if you just want to hum a melody, whatever you want to do, just a little bit of your favorite part of this album. Whoever wants to go first. I'm not picky. I don't want to call on anybody in particular and, you know, make you nervous. So just if you feel like going first, go ahead.
I'll start off this one.
All right.
But on a side note, I want to make this point before I forget it.
Okay.
Consensor name has been brought up a couple times. I think they missed a big point in Lethal Weapon, which I consider a Christmas movie. of not having Darlene Love sing "Baby, Please Come Home." She's in the movie. Yeah, you're
wondering, oh, she
wanna,
is. Yeah,
you want to put this in Christmas? Why don't you have her do it? Like, I when I watched that the other day, I'm like, I would have thrown her in there. But
maybe two on the nose. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just like, is that the same? Is that the same lady? Is that this? I'm like, it is.
And yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But so sorry, I'm not going to sing it, but I'm going to do the iconic.
Batman.
I still see that video that guy pulling the candy cane string.
Oh yeah, that video is so terrible. It's awesome.
But isn't that like most 80s videos? I mean, they were like awesome, you know. Then you think of like you saw the Thriller one, and it just completely you know, that one and like, yeah, Aha, yeah, exactly. You know, Take on Me just completely made them all ridiculously bad.
Money.
I was one of the few kids that had a like a VHS camcorder in fifth grade, and I'm pretty sure I could have shot a better video than what NBMC did there. That, remember the giant wallet had Santa? I don't know if it said Santa on it, but oh god, it was just so bad. It's good.
Ken Scott and I are going to be doing an MTV the videos that they would do their house videos from 81 to 86, and some of those they're up there. that's all I'm gonna say. But yeah, that was great, Vinny. What about you, Todd?
I'm gonna preface this by saying I do like Fleetwood Mac, but this Stevie Nicks Silent Night, it just, for me, it's not my favorite. It's like she lays into this vibrato in her voice really hard, and it just kind of wears on me after a while. So I'm gonna sorry, Dwayne.
I know. I'm out.
I think he just broke Gary's heart. I think
he's over there. Goes Dwayne.
But
oh man,
I'm snipping that, putting it on YouTube.
Oh goodness, Dwayne, you want to go?
No.
Still recovering.
Okay. That's fine.
If I was going to go, it would just be to mimic John Mellencamp's daughter at the end of I Saw Mummy Sitting Kissing Santa Claus. So I'll give that a shot, eh?
All right.
I saw Mummy kissing Santa Claus. Oh, that's pretty much how she sounded. I'm so sorry to that little girl.
She's not little anymore. Rough, dude. It's okay.
She's got big lawyers behind her now, so I better watch out.
Uh-oh. Dwayne mysteriously disappeared here.
Yeah.
While we're making fun of artists and their voices, though, you got Madonna. Santa baby.
Yeah.
Stick a sable under that tree. For me. Oh, it's like nails on a chalkboard.
And she gets so monotone throughout half the song. I was listening to it earlier, and I'm like, it just drove me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor girl.
Yeah. So let's put up all our professionally produced Christmas songs and let them have a go at us. Eh?
I know, right? Yeah.
And the Bon Jovi with they call me back to Santa. I'm layering 80 synths in and screaming guitars and I'm ruining this entire song. It's just so, so awful.
It's definitely not my favorite. Yeah. Yeah.
I have so many questions about that song still.
Yeah, it's on the burning trash pile of history. It's so, so bad.
Yeah.
And he has like a lot of his songs, they're great. But what happened? I don't know.
The source material was so good.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. And I'm a huge Bon Jovi fan, but that one didn't do it for me at all. Yeah.
Yeah, the song we couldn't think of before was Please Come Home for Christmas. Is one that Bon Jovi did that was the best.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And I like that one. I like his version of that. Yeah.
Yep.
It's almost like somebody is too scared to say to them, look, that's not a good song for you. Yeah, exactly. Let's try this.
Yeah. It's like telling someone their breath stinks. You know, you got to be real careful how you do it.
Yeah.
How about that? It's not a good song for a Christmas album for a children's charity.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's the basic. Yeah.
But then a couple albums later, John Popper does it.
Mm.
Was it any good?
It's much, much better. It's a lot closer.
It's a low bar to clear, Scott, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and if I remember right, I think Clarence Carter performed it with him.
So that is cool. That would do it.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Ken, you said that. That makes me wonder if this is kind of like that Pixar trope where they always slide in that one joke for the parents to get, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clarence Carter probably joined in because he was like, holy crap, I can't let this happen again. Yeah.
I'm sure he's getting pretty good, or he got, I should say, pretty good residual checks from just having his song sampled.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
that's probably what, you know, honestly, that's probably what, you know, tied up Bon Jovi's version of the song. They couldn't even use that guitar riff because it was in Christmas and Hollis, and you don't want it on here twice. So they probably had to come up with something different on the fly. I have no knowledge of that, but that's the only thing I could think of that
it's an obvious sample too. Even even my untrained ears, when I first heard it, I was like, oh my god, that they used that in Christmas and Hollis. Yeah. So if I heard it, someone else would definitely hear it.
And you know, since there's only 15 Christmas songs, they were forced to, they couldn't just switch.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you switch him for? Like, what's off? Are we gonna do Frosty? I mean, is John Bon Jovi gonna sing Frosty the Snowman?
I would have liked
to hear him sing Frosty, actually. Yeah, that's intriguing. Really, yeah. That's actually
Silver Bells, you know.
I don't know if that would have been a good fit for him.
Jingle Bell Rock would have been a good one for Button.
Jingle Bell Rock would have been really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just play to these strengths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, Jimmy, who's the worst artist we can come up with for this? It's Bon Jovi.
What about Jimmy, you, Ken?
The one that has really grown on me the most, and I'm not going to sing it so that everybody doesn't leave. well, they would have left by now. But the time is now, the place is here, and the whole wide world is filled with cheer.
Yeah.
Christmas and Hollis.
Yeah. Right on.
And I think it's just so funny that it just seems so offbeat and controversial at the time. And now I look at it like, this is an amazing song. This is iconic. Just how the times change things, you know, our experience.
Even if you remember in Die Hard when...
I thought I said like, put on Christmas music.
He's like, this is Christmas music.
And he's like, this is Christmas music.
Christmas is like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, Argyle turned it around. I mean,
he's the one
that got everyone
nice
going.
Deep cut there, Vinny.
but he said that he's like, this is Christmas music, and at the time it's just like, okay, it is. Yeah.
What about you, Scott?
Which one?
Holly Jolly right? Scott.
Yeah.
Are we doing our favorite or least favorite?
We can do our favorite.
I'll throw some love to John Cougar again.
All right.
I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good. Yeah. That was good. Well, and for me, I mean, I got to go with Sting. It's my favorite one. So I'm going to try my best here. Excuse me, but let's see. I'm going to go verse 4 for a minute. So it's like, of her, Emmanuel, the Christ was born in Bethlehem all on a Christmas morn. Something like that. Anyway, that's my...
Yeah, that was probably the best version that we had.
Yeah. You can tell those of us the singers and those of us who aren't.
But, you know, guys, it does make me, you know, I got to ask, you know, G.I. Joe taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do you think the other half of the battle is?
So for me, knowing is that you shouldn't listen to this album. Resisting is the second half, that you really shouldn't listen to this album.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I know that I could have used 45 minutes of my life back now after listening, or 50 minutes and 57 seconds. But I think the thing that I took away, Jerry, is that what I liked at age 11, you know, is not what I like at age 45. And maybe the flip side is true. Maybe I got to go back and look at stuff I hated then. Maybe I've grown a taste.
You'll like them now. Yeah.
Yeah. I learned tonight that, I just let a bunch of grumpy old men ruin my memories of this. Thanks, guys. Clint Eastwood me off your lawn tonight.
Yeah. Really did. Yeah. Well, for me, the other half of the battle is rhyme so loud and proud, you hear it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Winner, we want to say happy Christmas and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
What do you think, Todd?
The other half of the battle is when you're a young, good-looking rock star that just sold $8 million on your hit album, just don't pick a Christmas song out of a hat.
Yeah. Be more deliberate with it.
Yeah, ask more than one person what song you should sing. Right.
What do you think, Ken?
I think that this was a landmark album with all of the then-current pop stars bringing new material out for a Christmas album. And somehow nobody else has learned to do this. They didn't do it before. They haven't done it since. There have been another dozen very special Christmas albums, but yeah. Nobody else. All those, now that's what I call Christmas. They're all retreads.
Yeah.
They're all derivative,
right? Mm-hmm.
Nobody else has stepped up and done anything like this.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yes, some of the songs haven't quite aged as well as they could have. But at the same time, there's something magical and special about the album too. And maybe it is just nostalgia talking, but I completely get where you're going with. It was new and fresh and amazing. And I mean, it raised so much money for the Special Olympics that, you know, thank goodness this album was made. But for me, I think if knowing is half the battle, the other half is just adapting Christmas hymns and songs to your own style.
Yep.
Unless you're Bon Jovi, right?
Unless you're Bon Jovi, and then
calling sick that day.
Yeah. Guys, this has been so much fun. But you know, tell me about your different shows. What do you want to plug, Ken?
Well, I have the Sounds of Christmas podcast, which is much more active. I'm sure a lot of us are like that in November and December, but right. I'm still trying to keep it going year round. And I also have the Sounds of Christmas online radio station, and that's year-round. A wide variety of Christmas music all year long, except in October when we play Halloween music.
Nice. Do you, before anybody, do y'all do any, like, some of the more Halloween-themed Christmas music?
I did a spooky Christmas songs that I do every year, but I like to, I don't know. I think Todd said it best. Halloween is just a speed bump in the road to Christmas.
Yeah. I was just curious, like Monster Holiday or something.
I probably play Monsters Holiday once or twice between November 1st and January 1st. But for the most part, that's probably it.
Gotcha. Just wondering. Yeah.
Did you play Christmas Valentine a few times?
Yeah. Well, which version?
I didn't even know there were more versions.
No, I know there was a recent one and it just went out of my head. But I have two or three, and I don't, right now I'm not even sure if they're the same song or if it's just the same title.
Did Ingrid Michaelson? Did she do?
Yeah.
She did.
Ingrid Michaelson is the recent one.
Yeah. Ooh. It was an Amazon exclusive there for a while.
Oh, really? Okay. Maybe that's why I didn't hear it. Holly Jolly Scott?
I'm from Holly Jolly Xmasu, your podcast destination for Japanese Christmas music. I've got some really cool albums coming up. I've got a big stack, but I need to process and get ready to feature at some point. Now, actually, in March, I've got a couple episodes coming out with the singer named Iruka. She was basically like a folk singer. Her career stretched from, 70s into the 2000s. So yeah, I've got some good stuff lined up, and I still have to figure out a good part of my schedule for the rest of the year. But yeah, if you're looking for something a little bit different, tune in. You're going to hear music a lot of the times that you cannot hear anyplace else.
Right on. Why don't we do Scott and Dwayne together?
Well, I'll start. If you like,
you Scott, go ahead, Dwayne.
Make a bit more sense. So as many listeners may or may not know, I no longer host Tinsel Tunes. I've handed that over to Scott and Jay. They gladly took it off my hands while I was going through some issues.
I can tell you not everybody knows that, Dwayne, because I'm still getting emails for you. Love the show.
Yeah. Right. So you'll mainly find me as admin on the Tinsel Tunes podcast Facebook page, and as a guest host on some other podcasts like this one, for instance. Once this knee recovers and I sort of bounce back from all the mental issues that come with waiting for surgery, I'll just see where it takes us. But you can certainly follow me on YouTube under The Average Drummer. That's what I've called myself. Then people know what to expect. Or on Twitch as The Average Drummer as well. But yeah, you can certainly just get hold of me through the Tinsel Tunes Facebook page just to say g'day. And sort of we will take it from there where we go this year.
No takesies, backsies, Dwayne.
I tell you what, actually, I've missed doing the episode, because January and February has been like, we're going through what you guys went through as far as Omicron COVID goes.
Oh, I get you.
And yeah, so our numbers are rising and all that sort of stuff. We have protesters and all that sort of carry on. And I really missed doing the research to keep myself busy on that side of it for January and February. And I've got so many ideas that have come back to me that I was like, oh, I'll do that. Oh, no, I'm not doing that anymore. So more than welcome to be a host or a guest host on other podcasts if people want me, and we'll go from there. I know I'm going to be back on Tinsel Tunes at some point doing guest hosting with Scott and Jay, and yeah, we'll see where other things lead us.
Yeah, so as Dwayne said, Jay and I are carrying the torch for him, and we also do Jingle Jank, and Jay said it really well the other day. Tinsel Tunes is the linen napkin restaurant, and Jingle Jank is the place that has the red checkered tablecloth on it. That's where we play the weird, the offbeat, the obscure. We do interviews with people and just try to have more fun. On Tinsel Tunes, we try to keep it more buttoned up and really heavily focused on, you know, the history of usually very specific songs. I also do a podcast called Christmas Morning with Bran from Deck the Hallmark. Right now it's weekly. When we get to November, we'll do it daily again, but it's kind of a Christmas morning show where we talk about the upcoming TV specials and Christmas news, and we have a Christmas music battle. It's a lot of fun.
It's an excellent podcast. I really love that one.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Dwayne.
It's a lot of fun. Because it comes out Thursday morning for me here. So every Thursday morning when it comes out, I'm into it. Just having a listen. It's just great.
Nice. What we do on that one, the last thing I'll say on that is we pick songs from Bandcamp on that one, because we really try to focus on these unsigned artists and people you've just never heard of. And that has been an absolute blast. Yeah. So much fun. It's absolutely like a flea market, though. There might be great stuff and there's a whole lot of trash, and it's so much fun to pick through.
Yeah. I got involved in the last episode, choosing one of the songs that the guys had on. Yeah. And I got to the third page of the song and it's like, nope, I've had enough.
Yeah, I think we played
it. There was just so many bad versions, but when a good one came along, it really stood out.
It's fun. So much fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Todd?
Well, I host Christmas Clatter podcast and YouTube channel, where we celebrate everything that makes Christmas special. And I'll be handing out the Silver Bell Music Awards here shortly for this past Christmases, honoring the best in Christmas music. And if you like Christmas and Hollis, be sure to join us in June, because I will be doing a whole episode on Christmas and Hollis with a longtime New York DJ, radio DJ. So
fun.
We'll get some cool insight on that. Some things that I probably don't know from small town Missouri. So
I understand. I'm from South Texas.
So, but we're everywhere on the socials and your podcast apps and YouTube, all at Christmas Clatter.
Right on. Vinny?
You should try to get hold of one of the band members or somebody from that crew to...
I have sent emails. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. I've
Russell Simmons
reached out to Weird Al a couple of times, so we'll see.
Vinny? So I don't really got much to promote here. As you guys probably listening, you're like, who's Vinny? Yeah, I don't do a podcast. I'm actually just Jerry's. He doesn't want to tell you, but I'm actually his security detail. Here in Dallas, you know, when people hear his, I'll be honest with you, I'll go into his store and I'm like, there's Jerry. I hear him like across the place.
And it's, oh, wow. I'm so loud.
But I'll be honest with you guys. I'm honored to be with, on this, this podcast with most of you. Cause you know, I've listened to all your stuff here. You know, the Christmas Clatter Melee is one of my favorites. It gets a little intense, but hey, maybe Jerry D can keep it in line. But, you know, nerding out a little bit here, Dwayne, I'll be honest with you. You and Tim Babb are the two first you two are the first two I remember listening to the Christmas podcast. So you're like the OG here. So
the OGs.
It's like meeting Michael Jordan when I was younger, right? You know, we meet you, or hopefully someday I'll have one with Tim. But you guys are the ones that made me start listening to the Christmas podcast. And if it wasn't for you two, I probably wouldn't be listening to it. And everyone... You know, my wife, she's like, look, there could be worse things that you're into besides Christmas podcasts.
So true. You know,
that's one way to look at
gambling, it. But hey, yeah. Look, if you're going to go upstairs and record a Christmas podcast, like, you really can't complain. So it's been an honor being on here with you legends.
Spend the whole day on the golf course or gambling, or I can do a Christmas podcast. What do you want?
Yeah. And check out Huey and Bex on Instagram.
My dogs are semi-famous. They used to be big on Instagram, but we haven't really done, you know, once we hit that 20,000 follower thing, we quit. Like I was weird signing contracts for my dogs. I'm like, this is weird. I stopped.
Funny.
But on that note, thanks again, everybody. It was a lot of fun.
You didn't let Ken go.
I thought Ken was the first one that went.
Oh, no. Yeah. You were?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'll plug myself again.
Do it again.
Go ahead. Do it again. You know what? And tell us where we can find you.
Oh, I remember you going now. Yeah, now I remember. Yeah. Show's really good. You should listen to it.
And on that note, I'm going to end it by saying the time is now, the place is here, and the whole wide world is filled with cheer. So check us out on our social media pages, Facebook and Instagram at Totally Rad Christmas and Twitter at Rad Christmas. And if you're feeling like Run DMC composing their own Christmas song, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to check out our merch shop on tpublic.com and our brand new website, courtesy of Tis a Podcast Elf, Tom Crow. Have a very special Christmas and a happy new year. Later, dudes.
Hello, this is Todd Killian from the Christmas Clatter Podcast. What makes Christmas special to you? Is it the movies or the music, the food or family, the gifts or decorations? Maybe those quiet moments of reflection. Whatever it is, join me for Christmas Clatter, a monthly podcast dedicated to everything that makes Christmas special. Visit ChristmasClatter.com for all social media links and find Christmas Clatter Podcast on all podcast apps. Thank you, and remember, keep Christmas hope alive every day.
Hi everyone, I'm Dwayne from the Tinsel Tunes Podcast, and I have a questionably unhealthy obsession with Christmas, and I love Christmas music. So come with me on a journey as I go into detail about the history and stories behind a wide range of Christmas music. For instance, did you know that Silent Night has the honour of being the most recorded Christmas song of all time, and has been recorded over 137,000 times by separate artists? Or that White Christmas was actually written in the height of summer? Each song, either recent or a golden oldie, has a background, and I want to share them with you. Come join us for our second season and listen at tinseltunes.com. We are on all the main podcast services, or you can find us with a simple Google search. Also follow us on all the social networking platforms, and I hope to interact with you soon.
Hi, this is Scott from Holly Jolly Xmasu, your podcast destination for Japanese Christmas music. If you like Christmas music and are tired of the same old songs, this is the podcast for you. Join me each month as I explore my collection of Yuletide albums from Japan, featuring everything from city pop to 80s rock, long-lost jazz, and psychedelic garage rock. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's some of the greatest Christmas music you've never heard.
Go on, more楽しい, it's so lean.